This is a special edition of On the Ground, onthegroundshow.org, Voices of Resistance from the nation's capital, marking International Working Women's Day, March 2017.
I came out here to represent the Lakota women back home and to walk for my mother who couldn't come. And I think this is sending a huge message to him that we are here, we're not going away. Here to represent Haudenosaunee women, we're here to represent the missing and murdered Indigenous women. Is life standing against the DAPL pipeline.
We're going to have to be louder, and more of us are going to have to step up and stand together and really just put a lot of our differences aside as different tribal people and really come together and decide like that we have to do better. We have to demand better for our communities.
Welcome to this hour of special programming for International Women's Day. I'm Esther Averam, producer and host of On the Ground, onthegroundshow.org, Voices of Resistance from the nation's capital. I know you'll want to stay tuned for this show featuring conversation, music, and poetry about Native American women. The voices you heard at the top of the show were women who participated in the Women's March on Washington in January. Now, first I want to acknowledge this day's original name, International Working Women's Day, and acknowledge that it is the centennial celebration of this holiday. March 8th was made a day to honor women who went on strike and sparked the Russian Revolution, which overthrew the Russian oligarchy, the Tsars, 100 years ago today in 1917. This hour, we're focusing on the women, the indigenous women fighting the power on this side of the Atlantic. 100 years ago, the Native American population had survived what was, in practice and in policy, a cold-blooded genocide. And they were fighting continuing government policies to strip them of their children, their culture, and their land. Flash forward 100 years to the day, the violation of treaties and human rights to Native people continues as we're witnessing the construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline through Native land in North Dakota, endangering drinking water for millions of people. And this is after a fight when Native people were brutalized by police fighting on behalf of the private corporation Energy Transfer Partners. Throughout the centuries, Native women have played a key role in resistance and today are playing a key role in the growing unity among indigenous peoples of the Americas. Today, I'm honored to have several guests speaking on the resistance of Native Americans, and we're going to start our first segment with Susanna Sandoval. She's an activist known for immigration reform work. She's a migrant cultural worker, a human rights activist. She ran in the 2016 election cycle as a candidate for the U.S. Senate seat in Illinois and spent 3 months in the Osseti Sakowin Camp, Standing Rock Reservation in North Dakota. She is one of the women who fasted for 17 days in front of the White House here to move President Obama to write and sign an executive order on DAPA. She is in town for the Native Nations Rising actions on the National Mall, and I think she'll be heading over there right when we finish because there's a big women's panel discussion action. So thank you for rushing in from Dulles Airport, Susanna. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me on today. I'm really appreciative of having the opportunity, and I didn't realize that your colleagues gave up their time. So thank you to you for your support, and really appreciative of that. That's how we get things done, partnering together.
Okay, yes, so let's jump right in. What has been happening at Standing Rock has been in the news, but what is important that we know about the role of women in this resistance? I know for many of the actions I attended here in D.C. at the White House, and there was a big march from the Army Corps of Engineers to the White House, women have been, you know, in the forefront. A lot of these actions have been led by women. So I'm wondering, has Standing Rock and the Native Nations Rising action had a particular impact and role for women?
Of course. I mean, I think similar to, you know, I was listening to the voices of the Lakota Woman Warrior song that we marched with and in solidarity with our sisters. It reminded me of how over 500 nations came together in Standing Rock for over almost a year's period of time. In that time period, we had a lot of opportunity to visit with elders to talk about the Lakota, Dakota, Nakota values in the society, you know, as women, and it is a matrilineal society, and so as a matrilineal society that respects women at the forefront, it has been interesting and just absolutely amazing to see our women elders share knowledge, and our men, you know, understand that the two genders have to work together in order for society to function, and that the impending values come out when you're constantly being pushed into a direction which you know that your society does not value. You know, in this sense, it has to do with the protection of water. You know, that's going to affect many, you know, millions of people. And so when our society values water, we realize that we have protected water for centuries, mm-hmm. and that many of us, our families have worked the lands. My grandparents were migrant farm workers that migrated from the state of Michoacán and Purépecha from Mexico. And so, you know, we have a relationship to the earth that is very different. It's different when you work on the earth, when you deal with the earth on a daily basis, and you understand that you have a responsibility. And so it's been amazing to be close to the elders, to sit and listen. And what people, and I constantly say when I talk about Standing Rock, it's not a nostalgia that we talk about Standing Rock, because Standing Rock is everywhere. You'll hear that constantly, people saying that Standing yeah. Rock was a moment in time that we had with each other where people came and gathered to understand better the knowledge of the Lakota, Dakota, Nakota elders and share that.
And so I was going to ask you if that importance of water, you know, falls under the scope of women's sphere, kind of in terms of nurturing and the health of the family and community.
Definitely. I mean, you'll hear the Unchis, the grandmothers, talk about many of us have a memory of being birthed, you know, through a, you know, water experience. And so women are natural to be water protectors. We give birth, we have a relationship to the earth. And so the water, you know, outside of the scientific fact that, you know, 90% of our body is made out of water, and we seem to forget that, you know, and I think that relationship to the water is extremely important. In fact, the water ceremony that's happening and that happens at Standing Rock had to be led by women elders. And so here while we're visiting, you know, in D.C. and we have a teepee encampment, there is a water ceremony that we're inviting folks to. It's a very, you know, very public mm-hmm. ceremony that we would like people to participate in because it is the process that we had at Standing Rock at the camp.
And that'll be today?
It's every day. It's from 10 to 11. Mm-hmm. And I think we'll also have it, I think, on Friday. And I'll double check the schedule. But on Friday, we have the actual march, the Native Nation.
Right. We'll get to that right. Definitely later in the show. But, you know, I have a clip of a poet and educator, Lila June. And she was actually speaking at the Women's March. And I want to play her comments and then get you to react.
New Trump presidency, you know, it doesn't change a whole lot for Native peoples in the sense that we still live under an oppressive regime. However, I think it's important that we remember that we have so much answers in our traditional knowledge. We have so many answers of how to live and thrive on this land. And a lot of the genetic diversity that exists in terms of food production exists on Native lands. And so, mark my words, in 50 years, Trump supporters and Trump himself is going to be walking up to us with their hands out because their whole society will have collapsed. This whole city is built upon the destruction of its own umbilical cord, its own mother. And so when this city collapses, they're going to need somewhere to go. And who has that knowledge? Who has that sustainable food systems? Who has that understanding of how to live in one place sustainably? We do. And so we're going to be ready when the world collapses. And I think that's how we can continue to be in solidarity and continue to prepare for all the things that are going to happen in the coming weeks and months and years, is to continue to build our traditional systems and go back in time and look at what our ancestors did and revitalize those practices. Because if we can create those practices, we'll be ready for when this society can and will collapse. And so that's the way, best way I could say for Natives to stay strong in the next 4 years is to don't spend all your energy protesting an obsolete system that's going to collapse anyways. Spend our energy rebuilding the sustainable systems that our ancestors knew and loved and which we can bring back again, and build up those lifeboats because everyone's going to need them when the time comes and the crap hits the fan.
Yeah, that was poet and educator Lila June. And actually, she was speaking to the Environmental Indigenous Network that captured a lot of sound that day from Indigenous people. So I'm listening to her comments, and I was wondering if the resistance to DAPL, the Dakota Access Pipeline, sparked a newer appreciation in cultural and sustainable traditions, you know, among Native people.
Well, I was shaking my head while she was speaking because I've said that quote about the crumbling of society or the systems that we're existing in and how they eventually will falter because
it's cannibalizing itself. It is.
And also too, it was how this country was built, unfortunately, on the backs of other folks. And I don't want to take us to another side, but the fact that somebody recently, I don't even care to mention who it is, but you'll understand that when you talk about immigrants, was saying that the slaves on slave ships were immigrants and that they were coming to America for another opportunity. And I'll mention his name because you're giving me this credit. It was Dr. Ben Carson who was quoted as, you know, I was listening to him and I'm thinking like, wow, what a revisionist history. You know,
oh my God. No, I've heard some crazy Ben Carson quotes. I don't know if I heard that one. Was this recent?
Yeah, recent, right. And then I was thinking to myself like, wow, what history book did you read, you know, like growing up?
Because I don't think you have to. You have to, everything he says. I mean, you really start wondering if any of those brain surgeries were done on him. It's just kind of like, well, But
let's go back to the point that Lila Mehta. She's an amazing activist. I'm glad you included her work in it. I was trying to actually get a hold of her. We've all been traveling and doing the work that we do as cultural workers, as activists. So we're scattered in different parts of the country, and some of us even internationally, you know, sharing what happened at Standing Rock. But what Lila June mentions is that, you know, she encourages people to spend more time, you know, building. And, you know, I would encourage folks, I just came in from Arizona, where I spent some time with a colleague and friend of mine, Dr. Roberto Rodriguez, where we talk about creation resistance, where the fact that you are, yes, you have to resist on a regime that doesn't represent you, but also the creation is where the emphasis is. And, you know, that's why I cling to the label of a migrant culture worker. Somebody cringed when I called myself that. They said, "But you're so much more than just a migrant culture worker." And I said, "No, I'm very proud to call myself that,
because
I'm seeding, you know, and I'm growing, just as my grandfather was a grafter and would take two hybrid plants or trees and create another crop. It's what we do. It's innate to our tradition. And for those of us who understand where we come from, we don't need to read a book to know how this country was founded and how people were displaced and how people suffered, you know, and, you know, we're creating, you know, in the midst of that. We are building in the midst of systems that are failing. And I think Standing Rock was a great, an example of that. I mean, how could we claim in the United States of America to have First Amendment rights when people were being water hosed with, you know, with water cannons and
rubber bullets, dogs,
you name it, tear gassed, with nerve gas that we use on, you know, and in conflicts off of our lands that we use on enemies, you know, and a lot of folks that were at Standing Rock were,
you mean like tear gas? You mean like nerve gas?
Nerve gas. I mean, I was tear gassed, you know, there's a difference between regular tear gas and gas that has other detrimental effects, or knowing that you're in a camp and you're seeing, you know, planes going by that are, you know, you're under surveillance, and there's drones, and, you know, there's evidence of chemical trails being, you know, sprayed on you, and you know, and people knowing that a river might have been contaminated and very well like could have been contaminated, and, you know, just the reality of people speaking out on something that they believed on, you know, exercising their freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, and freedom of religion. There were permissions to pray in certain areas, and ancestral graves desecrated, you know, and people's devastated. But the one thing that we know is that, you know, we're resilient. You know, we have the courage because we have decided that this is our land and that we will continue to fight not only for ourselves, but for human beings.
Yeah. Seven generations.
Right, the seven generations forward, and knowing that that is our responsibility and that we have the opportunity, and specifically as women, we stand up and we say that we've had enough and that we need to work together and we need to you know, build that unity, and the men will follow. You know, and that is what is respected in the Lakota, Dakota, Nakota tradition, is that the camps have always been traditionally run by women, you know, and held by women. And as people, the men had traveled, you know, to hunt and gather. And, I mean, women were very well equipped to do all of that and self-sufficient to an extent, you know, and realizing that that is a tradition that, you know, we need to recognize it has value. You know, and it's, I always say, like, I'm not sure if we're rebuilding or we're recreating anything. I think what we're doing is we are building that hybrid experience where we're taking the past, we're rooting ourselves in the present, but we're constantly, you know, uplifting ourselves to the future, you know, and it's something that, you know, I'll mention it again, the creation resistance that, you know, that I've shared with folks, that it's the way that we've built, you know, and it's not a reactionary thing. You know, many of us have been fighting a lot of these issues, not because we are responding to something, but it's because it is what is right. It is what our tradition is.
Mm-hmm. Now, your ancestry is from Mexico, and talking to you made me think about the fact, you know, I've been thinking about it all along, but remember that, you know, at the same time that we've seen, you know, the violation of human rights at Standing Rock, you know, we, at the same time right now, we're seeing this people called immigrants, right, from Mexico, Central and South America being targeted for deportation, certain kind of immigration raids, and a certain new stepped up type of policing that's happening around the country. And it occurs to me that these events, you know, have created more unity among what people in this country consider almost separate groups. You know, people talk about, you know, the red people and the brown people. But, you know, really, you know, Native Americans and indigenous people are really all from the Americas here. So I'm wondering how that's played out in terms of people having more unity.
Well, in the Lakota, Dakota, Nakota tradition, we speak about the full medicine wheel, where there is a prophecy where people will unite and human beings will work together. I would say that for my people, for the Purépecha people who migrated through Mexico, and I might have mentioned this, you know, to you in preparing for the show, but we don't really recognize certain borders because the borders didn't cross, you know, like we didn't cross the borders. They originally were built around many of our communities. And when we look at the history,
the border crossed you.
Right. The border crossed us, but they were built around, they were built around our communities in the sense that the Native Americans here were put on reservations. You know, people took their, you know, took land from our peoples. You know, the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo in 1848 is really important to look at when we talk about these immigration raids. The Fort Laramie Treaty of 1851, and, you know, again, a revised version of that in a couple years later after that, you know, where we look at how this country was founded, how a group of people left their homeland and traveled to a new piece of land, and they displaced, and they were complaining of tyranny and, you know, things. And then that group of people then turned around and did that same thing to another group of people. And it's the human factor, you know, mm-hmm. that at what point are we going to stop the cycle of, right. you know, of genocide, of people looking at, you know, the what's evolving in our communities. What can happen is that we take these moments, these teachable moments, and say, we've had enough of this. We've had enough. And this is not the country, you know, the nation in which we stand for. This is not the race, you know, the human race that we're from. And our communities come together, not because it's a matter of whose suffering is greater, because that's, you know, there's a whole nother philosophy, you know, and under the guise of Christianity, and I always talk about it's Christianity with a big C or Christianity with a small C, you know, and this conquest of manifest destiny or the doctrine of discovery that gave a certain group of people that were considered spiritual in one tradition to have and use that guise to take over another community and land and to appropriate and to remove tradition and culture or attempt to remove it from. I
mean, but also not to give the same sense of spirituality and humanity to that other group of people. You know, in order to do that, you must not feel that your sense of humanity extends to those other people who you are displacing, and not just displacing, but killing.
Yeah, in a lot of sense. And that is what, unfortunately, what the history of our country is. And then we know that anything that's built on a faulty foundation eventually ends up faltering. And so, you know, when I hear Lila June say, you know, this society is crumbling, we witness it. We witness on the value of what the dollar is, you know, and how we don't value, you know, just in a sense of, like, we're talking about working women, right? Like, flex time and the ability to spend time with your children and balance your work-life experience. I mean, I personally have a background in workforce development, and to shift your mentality of what has priority, you know, what is more valuable, you know, and what is more holistic. You know, we, in that industry, you know, or in that sector where we talk about workforce development, is how do we value that? And should it only be women that are having that time? Is that why we're looking at family leave? And so the times that we're at right, you know, under the current administration is really important, because we're starting to look at the budgeting factor. We're looking at the budget that the nation has. And so how are we allocating our resources?
Right.
And what are we prioritizing? Are we prioritizing healthcare, and to what extreme? And how are we underwriting it? Is it just for the chosen few? You know, or is it for everyone? Everyone should have access to it. And, you know, we look at other things. And so when I hear you say about the history of the International Women's Day, and, you know, some of us didn't go to work today. And some of us can't stop working, because that's the way, that's what women do. We work. You know, we're the backbone of many economies all globally. And so, you know, there was a professor friend who put up on her Facebook page.
Hold that thought.
Sure.
Hold that thought. We're going to go to a break right now, and then we'll be right back.
They call it a pipeline, but those on the front lines know that black snake was sent for us to grow, to shed the skin our ancestors pray of wounds old and calloused, so that we may stay, so that we may unite. Unity our tool. No weapons are found in this court of rule. Men becoming ki'ai, steadfast in their guard, protecting women's hearts as their song become roots. Roots to cast out healing for all sentient beings. To honor sacred mother, heart forward we heal. The salmon will run, the mauna will breathe, the rivers will flow. The rainbow is here, and prophecy tells us all generations will hear.
Nations and our people that been living here for thousands of years.
Stand up.
We've been fighting for our freedom since the Nina and the Pinta and the Santa Maria.
Stand up.
Like Geronimo, Sitting Bull, Red Cloud, Crazy Horse, Lennon Peltier.
Stand up.
Now they poisoning the waters for our sons and our daughters, so we on the frontier.
We one
nation, one cause, one people, one tribe. Now it's us against the pipeline. Get on your feet for Standing Rock, and we'll show you how strong we could be when we unify.
To all my native people, recognize yourself, keep your head up. To all my tribal people, recognize yourself, keep your head up. To all my native people, to all the original people, to all my indigenous people, recognize yourself, keep your head up.
Stand up, 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 stand up.
From the beginning we was winning this game on planet Earth.
That was Stand Up, Standing Rock, No Dapple. The main artist was Taboo. Other featured artists, Tupaman, Drezis, Spencer, Batias, PJ Vegas, MC1. The woman reciting poetry at the beginning is actress Shailene Woodley. This is special programming for International Women's Day, which we know is really International Working Women's Day. I'm Esther Averam, and I'm in conversation with Susana Sandoval, an activist, poet, who's in town for the Native Nations Rising Actions on the National Mall. And joining us on the line is Verona Iriarte, a veteran activist and co-host of the Night Wolf Show here on Pacifica Radio. Welcome, Verona.
I'm glad to be on. Thank you for having me.
Well, you know, we left off talking about what might be called indigenous unity or here in the United States. And I'm wondering, you know, how broad is that analysis in terms of the diaspora? You know, in terms of people kind of creating links between what's happening at Standing Rock and what's happening with people in Mexico, like women working in the maquiladoras, and what do you see from where you sit and the work that you do?
Well, because of Standing Rock and prior to Standing Rock, Native Nations have been working with each other since the beginning of time. You know, we've had different kinds of confederacies that we've had to fight against, the invaders, and we've had our new conglomerations where we've worked together on just about any of the issues confronting us that have to do with Native people. I belong to the Choctaw Cherokee Tribe of Alabama, the United Confederation of Taino People, as well as the National Congress of Black American Indians. And we don't see that much difference in the issues that we have to work on together. And we, you know, try to confront as many issues that, as we can, so that we can make it better for indigenous people in the Western Hemisphere.
Mm-hmm. And also, you know, Standing Rock, I know, is just the most visible struggle. This week, you know, Native people here in D.C. are also drawing attention to other similar environmental and human rights violations in Oak Flat, Arizona, where the U.S. is trying to sell reservation land to mining interests. Choco Canyon in New Mexico just leased for fracking near sacred World Heritage sites. The Gulf of Mexico, the Arctic, and all these spaces involve Native people's lands. So, you know, what kinds of impacts and fight back exists on these other fronts? You know, even the renewal of the Keystone XL pipeline, you know, and you can both respond, Susanna, here in the studio, and Verona.
I want to say that on the East Coast, they're getting ready to organize against the ACP, which is a pipeline that's going to come through Virginia and North Carolina. So they're beginning organizations for that. Taino people, because of the predicament of Puerto Rico, you know, become, some people want independence and some people want statehood, but the island is called Boriquin, which is a Taino name for the island. There are people organizing for that as well, to become independent and not go for statehood.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Susanna?
There are a lot of camps going up now. I believe there's at least 10 camps, and there's more that are being built. The dangerous thing about, you know, I'm from Illinois, so the dangerous thing about the way that the land is being taken is that it's taken under the guise of, like, eminent domain, which is meant to be for public use. But again, it's driven by the concept of manifest destiny, where we're going to take what we need when we want it. And when I was at Standing Rock, we were shown parts of the reservation where 2/3 of the reservation is no longer owned by Native peoples. It's no longer farmed by Native peoples. And so they set up roles and then they change the roles. And so one of the things that you will hear about are independence movements, you know, happening in regards to response of, if you agree to do something and you write something called a treaty, and then you violate the treaty, you're going to hear a lot about treaty violations, then what do you have to stand on? Right. And how do people respond to that? And there's going to be varying degrees. You know, the intergenerational dialogue is really important, because the history of that, you know, there are people who have lived through many of those independence movements. I'm from Chicago, so I'm familiar with the Independista movement, where there's a strong Puerto Rican community that wants the island to be free, you know, and there's people that will say, well, you know, we have better benefits. But under whose idea of benefits, you know, of societal benefits is that? And at what cost? To which people?
Exactly, at what cost? Because that independence movement was just totally wiped out, even though the remnants of it still remain. And those remnants that remain are very strong.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I want to talk about the importance of allies, you know, and maybe the difference between what's happening now and what happened under the Obama administration. I have a clip produced by Greenpeace of a rally in the Pacific Northwest where folks were opposing Shell drilling in the Arctic.
My name is Brandon Yen, and we're here at Jericho Beach today to talk to some of the Greenpeace activists who are here to say Shell no to Shell's proposed Arctic drilling for oil.
And I stand here with you and with the unbelievably brave First Nations people who are trying to stop big oil from spoiling the coastline.
Shell no.
Shell no.
Shell no.
Shell no.
Shell no.
No more pipelines.
Shell no.
No more tankers.
Shell no.
No drilling in the Arctic.
No.
This is Wes Regan, Green Party of Canada's candidate in the federal election for Vancouver East, and I say shell no.
We know the facts already, because the National Energy Board through Canada are not looking out for the best interest for our lands and waters and the people that live here.
Hi, my name is Constance Barnes. I'm the NDP candidate for Vancouver Centre, and I say shell no, shell no, shell no, shell absolutely no. That's what I say.
So that was produced by Greenpeace during that struggle. And, you know, it occurred to me that there were some victories, you know, under that last administration. There was a time when this Shell operation was turned around and they weren't able to go to the Arctic to do this drilling. And I remember the kayaktivists, you know, blocking the bridge, I think maybe out of Seattle, but, you know, blocking a bridge so the ship couldn't go through. So what is the difference right now, do you see, in terms of fighting these types of violations and this kind of environmental degradation under the Trump administration versus what happened under the Obama administration? Verona?
I would say that Obama did have a little bit more respect for Native people. He did meet with them on every year, especially with the federally recognized tribes, he was able to get some legislation through that helped Native folks. Well, Trump totally has ignored Native people and totally disrespected because he's invested in the pipeline.
Right.
And even though Obama didn't do one specific thing that we hoped that he was going to do, and that was free Leonard Peltier, you know, I still have a little bit of respect for him when it comes to dealing with Native people.
I think what the challenge, it doesn't matter who the president is, what people have to understand, and I'll go back to the treaties. One thing that, and I'm from Chicago, so I tend to be slightly more critical of the previous administration, but there's a respect that's given to nation states and the relationship between that. And we're so removed from our own history that we don't understand what the dialogue should look like and what that level of respect should look like. So when there was an issue with the Standing Rock Sioux tribe that should be considered a nation state, the response could have been, and probably should have been, from the president, a direct conversation with that the chairman of the tribal nation. What in fact happened was he chose to use the branches of the powers of the executive branch and let it go through the three departments and did put an initial pause through the process. But the conversation and the dialogue of what's termed in legal terms as consultation was never fully completed. And that's what people, you know, what Indigenous peoples are most upset about. Again, we say one thing, we write something down, and then it's not followed or respected. And so in that sense, you know, there's some challenges, and we need to look at what has been written down, how people's rights have been violated, and what is the right respect. Not only is number 45 invested in the pipeline, the previous North Dakota governor, Dalrymple, also is invested in the pipeline. And Richard Trumka, who's the head of the unions, is also invested in the pipeline. So we have conflicts of interest. And there are a lot of challenges when people are saying that they have jurisdiction over something and they have economic interest in the process. And so it would seem that it would preclude you from having any say-so, or you would remove yourself, you know, with some level of integrity to the process. But again, we can't say that, and so then we have a process that is flawed. And that'll go, I'll refer back to the immigration process. We've known since 1986, since Reagan gave the amnesty process, that the immigration reform system has been flawed. Otherwise, there wouldn't be a backlog of so many people waiting. Right. You know, and I mean, we're talking about folks that have been waiting for quite some time in regards to that.
Well, if we go back to the Constitution, it really doesn't address Native people anyway. So we have to go back to that issue. And plus the doctrine of discovery, which, you know, totally negated us as human beings.
Right. You know, one thing I want to do before we go to a break, again, is talk about how these types of environmental projects, these pipeline projects, you know, they have these man camps of laborers, and how this has created a really detrimental impact on Native women. And then similarly, let's segue into the whole issue of assaults and even murder of Native women. And why don't you start, Susanna, about the man camps?
Right. Well, it has to do, again, with an industry that is mostly male-dominated. And the camps are, I mean, even though they say that there's, you know, 26,000, 29,000 jobs that are created, a lot of the jobs are it's transient. You know, the people move where the job is. And so there's not a lot of settling naturally of people in that space. So in regards to the man camps, people are opposed to the way the industry is not being monitored, because there have been a lot of women that have been violated because of that. I mean, there's a sister, Deborah Parker, who works with the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center, who filed an amicus brief in adjoining the claims of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe because of their concern, and again, how the industry is monitored, or the lack of monitoring for that. And so, you know, there's concern. I mean, when there's large groups of men that are working, you know, long hours in some pretty, North Dakota is negative 40 degree weather at the extreme, most extreme weather that I've been at. You know, what do? I mean, there seems to be some kind of type of recreation that they seem to prefer. And unfortunately, these man camps have been part of that culture that they've created within that industry. And so, of course, the indigenous communities that these pipelines have been around are going to be concerned for women.
Verona, did you want to add?
I was going to add that, of course, that's heightened when you have those man camps, because sexual assault against Native women, as well as being murdered and missing, it's been ongoing for the longest time. Mm-hmm. And we have, like, the highest rate of missing and murdered women.
Yeah, I saw, I think, from the Indian Law Resource Center that one of the issues is that the United States has created has limited the ability of Indian nations to protect Native women from violence and to provide them meaningful remedies. According to the center, the U.S. has stripped Indian nations of all criminal authority over non-Indians. And as a result, Indian nations are unable to prosecute non-Indians who reportedly commit 88% of the violent crimes against Native women on tribal lands. And the Census Bureau reports that non-Indians now comprise 76% of the population on tribal lands. So that's definitely, you know, contributing to that issue. I need to go to a break, and I want to come back with some cultural presentations. Roy Shabala is standing by, and we want to get to that after this break. That was Ulali, Mother Tribute to Native American Women, on this special programming for International Women's Day, International Working Women's Day. I'm Esther Averam, and I'm in conversation with Susana Sandoval, activist and poet, Verona Ariarte, veteran activist and producer here at WPFW. And now we're joined by Roe Shibala, who is a spoken word artist of the Diné people from Arizona. She performs spoken word poetry to tell her story and her story of her life and her people. Appropriately, she joins us from Fort Resistance, Arizona. Welcome to the show, Roe.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be on the show.
Well, tell me, you know, I hope you've been able to hear a little bit of about what we're talking about. Tell us about a little bit about how your art intersects with the resistance that's happening right now.
A lot of my poetry that I have been writing has been more storytelling of going along with Native American struggles, the different type of issues. A few years ago, I wrote a poem about how Native Americans were depicted as mascots and dehumanized by turning them into caricatures, and the whole with Hollywood, and how they did perpetuated the stereotype with Native Americans. And the poems that I write now is just, it's the poem that I have that I'm going to present today is more just kind of talking about how our history is, in a way, it's continuing to repeat itself in different forms.
So why don't we go right to it?
Okay, the poem, it's called An Apology from the Northwest Passage. So it's come to this. I was Lewis and Clark's symbol of peace, Native woman with child on her back leading the corps at Discovery. The first time men would take direction from my woman, I didn't know I was an instrument of manifest destiny as I surveyed the terrain, this land and I. We are of the same nature. 1806. No sooner had the ink on their maps dried as the land seized from sea to shining sea. Dear God, had I known the people I'd promised peace would be rounded up and like the buffalo they slaughtered, scalps used at blood-soaked bounty, women killed, raped, and sold, children kidnapped and reformed. If I had known they'd twist our tongues and to cough up their language like blood, I would have let them starve. I would have sunk their books and bodies at the bottom of the river they named after me, shoved them off the cliffs along with the plaques reading with the mispronunciation of my name, Sacagawea National Park. What have I done? They put my face on the same gold they stole from mountains I guided across. I was already currency when I came on this journey. My body cast iron displayed at the state capitol courtyard. I see paintings of me wrapped in a flag that represents blood, broken treaties, and suffering. My children, I am so sorry. I listened to your footprints over the pavement of North Dakota Highway 1806, you, a formation of standing rocks. I remember hearing those songs on my travels, songs of protection and water, war cries against the howling of dogs that tore through the flesh of our children, over blasts of concussion grenades, rubber bullets colliding with skin, teeth chattering from the breath of water cannons, the sound of metal scratching the earth until she bleeds black. I hear them raising the dead, gurgling out of the grave. Our people know it would suffocate the life of water, darken our clouds, tremble our grounds, distracted by the sweet, crude song of oil. They don't listen. They almost look rich in its reflection. I take responsibility of the hum of machines. I thought they were good men. I was sure I taught them how to be well and noble. I thought I taught them how to care for the land, showed them respect for all living things, included my people, not to hurt or kill, but to enlighten. I am so sorry. They spoke of great leaders. I thought they were good men. My beautiful children of the seventh generation, I hear your footprints, strong voices, you shimmering river stones. You called upon us, your ancestors, for guidance. The spirit of the buffalo ran next to you. Their speed and strength are within you. The golden eagle glides above with protection songs. You are our spirit, our strength, our legacy. You are our prophecy, a prayer granted. Help me. Help me correct my wrong as I watch you lead the way.
Roe Shibala from Fort Resistance, Arizona.
That was nice.
And
beautiful.
So
thank you.
Yes. So, you know, I know that women's voices, including cultural presentations, are featured on the mall, the National Mall here in D.C., with panels and other presentations. So nativenationsrising.org, I believe, is the website where people can see more about the schedule. So we have to wrap up now, but I want to give time. If you have some final thoughts, Susanna and Verona and Roe.
I would just like to say thanks for everybody listening, and do what you can to form coalitions and alliances, because we need to get organized and make sure that those things that we need to take care of are taken care of.
Hmm. What I would like to say is that the best tools that we have in this revolution is our minds. And the thing that we need to protect the most are our souls. I know it was W.E. Du Bois who talked about the souls of black folks, but this country, this nation needs to have a soul, and it's women who have souls. And so my request is that we spend some time, a lot of us don't know our history, and just spent a week teaching in Arizona and asking some questions about and sharing my process as a writer, how I got to community organizing, how I got to ideas of what I consider to be social justice. And, don't be afraid to love. That's the one thing. And I understand there's a lot of hatred going on. But there are many great folks. Audre Lorde, I will say her name over and over again. There's like tons of people who we can get past this.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to. And the only way to raise up consciousness is to raise a whole new generation and generations forward on the reality of not being afraid to talk about truth, mm-hmm. speaking truth, and speaking about what happened. We understand that. We understand that happened, but that doesn't have to be our reality. Mm-hmm. We choose something different.
Mm-hmm. Roe?
I want to say thank you for having me on the show, and also to put that thought out there of continuing to know within your own identity, the prayers, the songs, to hold that positive feeling. And I feel holding that positive feeling and to be able to express it would ultimately change a lot of courses. And to me, it's having that love.
Mm-hmm.
For us not to be able to be angry or to be sad or to be disappointed, it's for us to, and that's what I would want, is to kind of just spread that love, and for all the artists out there to continue doing what they're doing by continuing to opening our eyes with their artwork.
Thank you so much. And that will do it for this hour of special programming for International Working Women's Day. I want to thank my guests, Susanna Sandoval, Verona Ariarte, and Roe Shabala. Thanks to Mike Red Eagle Nacella on the boards. And thank you for listening. I'm Esther Rivera. We're going to go out with Navasha Deya. It's all about freedom. Keep raising your voice out there. Peace.
It's still her color, freedom. It's still her color, freedom. It's still her color.